Hi, short film fans, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. I'm Nigel Morgan, and joining me after a bit of a hiatus is the irrepressibly magical video wizard, George Mole.
Irrepressibly magical. Love that. Thank you. Such respect.
That's just for you.
Thanks, mate.
Just for you.
I needed that, you know, at the moment.
I've missed this, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've missed it. And George, what have you been up to?
Not much. I've been sort of doing a bit of this, a little bit of that, getting ready for lockdown. I've watched a few films recently that I'd never seen in a bit of a Halloween vibe. I finally watched John Carpenter's They Live. Absolutely loved it. Can't believe it took me so long to watch it. In the video game world, I'm playing Vampire, which is with a P because it's the classic vampire, which actually was quite fitting and felt a lot like the setting for The Healer. So I was getting a lot of vibes of one of our films today, which is great.
Oh, excellent. Look at you foreshadowing and everything. You're firing on all cylinders today.
I am.
You know what? I do have to stress that it wasn't entirely George's hiatus. So we've taken a bit of a break to make a few adjustments to our platform, some of which we can't tell you about just yet, but some of which we can. For example, if you head over to our site, cameolaunch.com, you'll see that we now have an online store. So we've got DVDs, Blu-rays, books, and more to come in the coming weeks. So not content with highlighting excellent short film, we want to provide an online space to purchase cult classic and independent films, including classic Van Damme movies, Akira Kurosawa's Samurai Collection, the Werner Herzog Collection, and more. We are providing a commercial space for independent artists, including authors, which has allowed us to be able to offer books from Nottinghamshire-based label 88 Tales, one of which is a dark comedy called The Assassin's Wedding, which is about an international assassin whose fiancé thinks he's an insurance salesman. On the week leading up to his wedding, he stumbles on a missing persons case that threatens to kick off a series of assassinations that threaten to turn his big day into a proper downer. There are more books from the same author also available in the store, so head on over to cameolaunch.com/shop to check it all out. So that's one thing. Another is we've added a visual to our audio and are now available on both podcast and video. As such, as well as being able to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, Deezer, Podcast Addict, and many more, you can also subscribe to our brand spanking new YouTube channel. When subscribing, don't forget to hit the bell so you get notifications when new episodes are posted. Honestly, I figured a couple of weeks to add a few more attractions to the platform wouldn't be the biggest deal. I mean, how much could we possibly have missed? I mean, the coronavirus is under control. So all of the big movies like Disney's Soul, Black Widow, of course, James Bond, No Time to Die should still come out on time. We've got the Coming to America sequel coming to cinemas at Christmas and absolutely not being sold off to Amazon for a VOD release only. There's absolutely no need to worry about big tentpole films being cancelled, leading to the closure of Regal, America's second largest cinema chain, or Cineworld here in the UK, both of which until further notice. And we absolutely don't have to be concerned about a second lockdown. Even if that did happen, there's no way fate will conspire to have it intersect with the most contentious US presidential election in living memory. And even if that happened, surely it would just run as smoothly as normal without legal challenges and armed militias alleging voter fraud without evidence, throwing into peril the very concept of a free and fair election in the most powerful country on earth. Right, George?
Yeah, none of that's happened whatsoever, and the world's not on fire and everything's fine.
Absolutely. And, you know, the scariest thing about that list, you know, hypothetically scary, because sure, none of that would happen, is all the stuff I skipped over. But since we don't have to worry about any of that, what do you say we talk about some short film?
Let's talk about some short film instead. Yes, please.
Well, this is a special episode as we're introducing a new segment in which we talk to filmmakers about their short films, but also about short films that they love from other filmmakers. So earlier this week, I spoke to filmmaker and National Film and Television School alum Misha Virkin, director of a supernatural period drama entitled The Healer, in which an imprisoned healer is forced to help rid a 16th century king of demons possessing his mind. Misha's short film pick was a fantasy domestic drama entitled He Took His Skin Off For Me from director Ben Aston. George and I will be sharing our thoughts on both films, but first we're going to jump into our discussion with Misha Virkin. Now, fair warning, on the day of the interview, our internet connection was somewhat less than reliable, which resulted in some lapses in sound quality and picture quality if you're watching the video edition of this episode. That said, we had a great chat about Misha's work and his thoughts on an absolutely stunning short film, so sit back and enjoy. So, Misha, you're going to be the first filmmaker to appear in our new segment where filmmakers talk about short films that have really struck a chord with them from other filmmakers, and what really makes them stand out for you. And we'll get to that in a moment and hear your thoughts. But first of all, do you want to share a few thoughts about how you've been managing the hellscape that is 2020?
Yeah, I mean, as well as I think anybody else has, I guess, which is probably not very. yeah, we kind of we graduated from the NFTS 2 weeks before lockdown, so we kind of had 2 years kind of building towards this one moment. Had our showcase, kind of got agents, lots of exciting meetings, and then the world imploded, and so did our hopes and dreams. But you know, ultimately, we've got a health. I've been able to freelance over the whole kind of lockdown period, so I can still keep a roof over my head. And I've just had kind of 5 or 6 months just to write and develop my slate, which I would not have had the opportunity to do if I just kind of ran headfirst into the first job I could get.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have had to sit down and make a few really difficult choices, not least in the arts. It's great that you've been able to find some ways around that. And you mentioned your slate. Is there anything in there you can talk about, or is that all still very much in development?
I mean, it's all very still much in development, but I basically got a whole kind of variety of film and TV projects in development with different production companies, producers and writers. The one that kind of seems to be pushing forward the quickest is a horror relationship drama called Alive and Well that is currently with Erebus Pictures and Joy Productions. So it's got BFI development money through them. And we're chatting to Film 4 about potentially kind of moving forward with it that direction. That's kind of my, it's kind of Marriage Story meets Babadook. The fear of passing down all your defects to your kids and kind of how that manifests itself. But it's also a dark comedy. It always sounds really, really dark and depressing when I explain it, but it's actually really funny as well. There's a ton of stuff kind of all over the place, which has been great because it means that I've been busy despite, you know, being in my room for the past 5 months. I've actually had kind of like a sense of purpose and schedule, which has been, I think, a godsend, to be honest.
I can only imagine. I mean, it all sounds incredibly, incredibly exciting, actually. And fingers crossed that all of those projects can move forward once things start to approach whatever normal is going to be from now on.
Whatever that means as we slide on into lockdown on Thursday again, yeah.
Lockdown 2.0. I mean, what you have recently put out, your short film, The Healer, is an incredible piece of work, I have to say. It's something that you come to with not a lot of understanding as to where it's going to go, which is a good thing, definitely a good thing. And sets up a lot of expectations, which it then subverts quite well without kind of breaking the premise that it establishes. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about what The Healer's about and what led you to that project?
Yeah, of course. So The Healer is a supernatural horror set in the 16th century about an imprisoned healer who is enlisted to rid a king of his demons. And what starts as kind of an unnerving horror set in this quite intense environment with these quite intense characters slowly kind of transforms into this exploration of mental health and how kind of messy and chaotic it can be when your mind turns against you. And the project basically is it's called a digifiction project in the NFTS. And it's the middle film between our kind of big first film and our grad project. And this is meant to be the kind of rough and ready DIY project. And we're basically, to kind of limit us, we're given a very small budget and we're given 3 lights. And we're told to kind of go and make this this project where we can kind of be a bit bold and be a bit experimental. But I'd always wanted to do a period film and I didn't want to do it for my grad project. And so this was kind of the only opportunity I would have. And it also kind of worked for us aesthetically because it meant that we could light with candles, which means we weren't limited to our 3 lights. So it was all very tactical in the development process until we actually got to the production process where it became slightly more tricky. But yeah, the premise of it is very personal. Mental health is a huge kind of part of my life, my family's life, and something I'm always looking to kind of interrogate and explore. And this particular project is kind of about taking something that's very personal about my own mental health and my relationships and how they've been impacted, and transposing that to a completely different environment and seeing if by doing that, I could still retain like a compass of truth that kind of guided me through what was quite like a fantastical, you know, otherworldly place, but still give it a grounding and a sense of kind of honesty and compassion.
You mentioned that mental health is key to your reasons for making this film and to its main themes. How much a part of that was vulnerability as well, particularly in men, with the way that masculinity is traditionally and typically portrayed and the way we're told we're meant to exert that. How much a part of your thought process was vulnerability in this film?
I mean, vulnerability is a massive part of kind of all my work, really. I always love to take characters who society might judge or, you know, presume to be one way or the other, and then just peeling back the layers and kind of really interrogating kind of why they are where they are, and also just kind of delving into that humanity that's just present in kind of everybody. And especially when it came to this film in particular, because this idea of kind of toxic masculinity and how it kind of oppresses healthy and constructive discussion about mental health is something I care about hugely. And so I wanted to kind of take the ultimate kind of symbol of man, which is right. A king, and just kind of like peel back like the layers and why someone like that, you know, even someone like that could be faced with these problems, and the impact that him not talking about and him not kind of admitting this sense of kind of feelings of unworthiness and vulnerability and weakness basically has created this like incredibly toxic relationship between him and his wife, right. Where she's trying to do right by him, which is basically, you know, keeping him down in the dungeon, you know, bleeding him with leeches, bringing this healer to kind of rid him of what she thinks to be demons. And she's just doing kind of everything that she, you know, of that time thought was right. And he kind of is unable to talk to her. And so that those two kind of opposing sides just create this like complete kind of disjointed relationship. And the healer's kind of bridge.
The way you're taught to think about power is that it essentially has itself all figured out, that nothing is beyond its control. If something is beyond your control, then the answer is more power, so on and so forth. But here we have somebody who all the power in the world can't rid them of what they believe to be literal demons. And it's somehow easier to believe that than it is to believe that you have issues within yourself that you simply need to express in some way, shape or form, in an open and honest way. And that's viewed as weakness. Was there a direct thing you had to draw on, or did the story kind of take you in that direction kind of the more you developed it?
It was basically kind of an experiment, because my kind of aim is to work in IMTV as a director, and so I'll definitely be working off other people's scripts. And so it was kind of a way to experiment with how to find a personal through line within a subject matter or a world that was completely not connected to myself. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to take something that was really personal and then something that was like the opposite end of the spectrum, this like 16th century kind of period piece, and see if I could use that as like a guide through it to find like a real kind of truth. I think class has always been a huge part of my work and something I'm always looking to kind of really explore in terms of, especially in terms of power dynamics. And this idea that kind of socioeconomics really decides what opportunities you have.
Yeah. And as I say, we don't want to get too deep into it, but the film is available to watch on Vimeo, and you can also catch our review on our site, cameolaunch.com, as well. So yes, anyone who hasn't quite caught up with that yet, please do watch The Healer by Misha Birkin. It is a fantastic film. And yeah, it's been really, really great talking about that. Shall we move on now to the short film that you want to talk about?
Yeah, it's a film, He Took His Skin Off Me, by Ben Aston, who's a brilliant director. I saw it kind of 5 or 6 years ago, and it just stuck with me. The premise of the film is, as the title says, about someone who takes their skin off for their partner. And for me, it was kind of this very much about sacrifice that uses kind of this really brilliantly fantastical yet grounded magic realism to dig deep into something. And it's definitely something that I think will resonate with everybody. I think everyone's been in a situation where they feel they're sacrificing more or less for a partner. And yeah, it's kind of the stickiness of that, stickiness of love.
I mean, it does very much stand out, both in terms of the title itself and visually. I mean, I think what they were able to accomplish with the prosthetics to actually, you know, accomplish the storytelling is just outstanding. Mm-hmm. But all of those things aside, it's a very intimate story. And it's played with such earnestness that you are able to read your own experiences when watching the film. What are some of its most powerful attributes for you?
Yeah, I guess like the deceptive simplicity of the cinematic language is like it feels almost kind of, you know, so surrealist, as in we're just kind of plopped down into this couple's you know, day-to-day life, but because of this hugely fantastical element, it just adds just a curveball to kind of the entire proceedings. But how it unfolds is, yeah, I think actually to tell a story in that on the surface simple level but have such complexity underneath it all, I think it's just it's way harder than you'd ever expect. You know, my inclination is always to like more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to play with all the cinematic tools. I want to have like the biggest score, the biggest visuals, the biggest performance. But actually, Ben Aston's restraint is just so admirable. It could be so easy to kind of really lean into the fantastical elements, but he just holds back and just tells this really nuanced relationship drama. And also quite a fairy tale. And I think there's the fairy tale aspect is really what makes it resonate kind of, you know, across a spectrum of audiences, because you're able to kind of project your own experiences onto it. Because, you know, there's no dialogue. It's all voiceover. I think the just the images of the house covered in blood, them lying together in bed, him pulling at her skin, they're just images that just like stick in your mind, because you've never experienced anything like that before, of course, but I mean, that's the power of cinema. It just makes you think about your life, makes you think about those relationships that you've been in. I think that's really what everyone hopes for.
I just love how the tone of it is so softly layered throughout the whole thing, from the how softly delivered the narration is. It's just this wonderful juxtaposition with that and how unintentionally violent, emotionally violent the situation they are in is as well. Yeah
exactly. It's basically this, like the violence of a toxic relationship within the kind of like the calm like womb of domesticity, like, you know, she's washing the sheets, they're having dinner, it's just like everything that you can kind of, you know, I do that with my partner, I've been there, I've done this, we've had those arguments, and then with the violence of the image of just like of him,
yeah,
it's just brilliant. And those two things kind of, yeah, like I say, juxtaposing, it's so powerful.
Another fantastic film. It does definitely stay with you for a long time after you watch it. I can definitely see why that was the first thing that came to mind when you're asked to pick something that really stood out for you. It definitely stands out for me. It's a fantastic piece of work. The link to view that film is also included in our episode show notes, along with the link to view The Healer and for our review of The Healer as well. So do catch up with all three of those things. So Misha, what is next for you, and Where can people find you to see more of what you've done and to keep up with what you're going to do next?
Next, I will be in my room for the next however many months come this Thursday. You can check out my work at misha-vertkin.com and at misha-vertkin, kind of on all the socials. So, you know, follow me for no updates.
No, but the project we talked about sound really, really amazing. So we'll ensure that people can follow you, and we'll include the links to your socials in the episode show notes as well. But thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on the film and on the upcoming projects as well. And we definitely hope to see more of your work in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much, Nigel. Really appreciate it. Hope it wasn't a train wreck.
It's the best kind. So that was writer and director Misha-vertkin. As mentioned in the interview, you can see more of his work at his site misha-vertkin.com and at vimeo.com/Misha-vertkin, and you can catch him on Twitter and Instagram on the handle at Misha-vertkin. So George, should we dive into Misha's film first? So what were your thoughts on The Healer?
Yeah, I loved it. Thought it was really good. It was dark, suspenseful, and distressing as well, which was great. And I love the sort of, effects with the music and the sound and a lot of heavy breathing you could hear underneath it. It really set the scene straight away that you were watching something a little bit upsetting, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the tone it sets from the off is dread, in a word. You know, the first person you see is the titular healer, and you know, there's this really stark image of her just being surrounded by darkness and just descending down into it. And you know, from that opening image, you just kind of like, this person is about to walk into forces that she's not going to be able to control. So from the off, you're given a real sense of foreboding, and the sort of use of lighting is just so brilliantly done from that point on that you're always just completely enveloped in what's going on. You're enveloped in the world that it's in, because as well as giving a very detailed, visually detailed depiction of the world in which it happens, the way the lighting kind of frames everything, it kind of claustrophobically traps you in with the characters in the film as well. So I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. We picked up on the same point there. There's that early point, literally right at the start, where the screen is almost completely black, and sort of the cavern takes up the whole screen, and they do that trick that was not even a trick. Everyone loves it, where the cave is on the side with the light, and as the character walks into it, the blackness seems to envelop the whole screen, getting darker and darker. It literally feels like the titular character of the healer is going into the underworld almost, and she is. She's going into sort of a hell of her own universe, of her own world that she walks down into, and she's captured and sort of ensnared by all of that darkness as she moves on to the next scenes. And it's just such powerful imagery, and it just looks beautiful. Every frame, a painting. It's a beautifully lensed film, I guess you could say. It does just look...
There we go. I've missed that. I've missed that.
Got to get all the catchphrases out, all of them.
Absolutely. There's one for your cameo launch bingo, if you're waiting out for that one. You're absolutely right. I mean, it is wonderfully shot. And I think it's a great example of where your visuals and your sound mix and your score all work really well together.
Absolutely.
Because the score itself was just so unsettling, but so sort of precise.
Yes.
In where it was kind of guiding you into the story. And then on top of that, the actual the sound mix as well, from the wind in the background.
Yeah, and the breathing.
The breathing, particularly when the king who the healer is sent to cure is first revealed.
Yeah.
So menacing. I mean, the actor who plays him is quite a strong physical visual presence anyway. But then, you know, you add that breathing to it, and he exudes danger, which is, you know, a great misdirect from where it actually ends up going as well. And, you know, it's a great example of technical craft guiding artistic story. I thought it was just incredibly well done in that regard.
Absolutely, yeah, I love the score, the sort of orchestral singing and the whispering that's implemented. Sometimes the whispering is actual diegetic sound, like we have that absolute unit of a king creeping up behind the healer, and he's playing with such gravitas and there's such force behind him. As you say, it's kind of a misdirect as the story progresses, but it's just amazing how there's these droning noises getting louder and louder, and then the whispering, you're not even sure now if it's actually part of the score or if it's actually coming from the characters in the film, which makes it all together just more and more unsettling. Really, really powerful.
And it all plays nicely into the kind of story being told as well, without getting too deep into spoilers or anything like that. I mean, you will have heard from the interview itself, this film touches on issues like mental health and masculinity, concepts of strength and weakness, and how we're taught to regard those things, and how communication can become, you know, the lack of communication can become a toxic presence in a relationship as well. And that's the fact that he was able to touch on all of those things, not to mention things like class, status, power dynamics, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He was able to touch on all of those themes, but still keep the narrative itself on track and keep the focus exactly where it's supposed to be. I thought that was just fantastic writing all the way around. And you know, that of course is elevated by the technical mastery that's on display here. Oh, as well,
definitely.
I mean, it's subtle in all the right ways, but it also is striking in all the right ways as well. So it really does pull you in, and most importantly, really leaves you thinking about it once the film's over. Big fan of this one.
I really like the sort of tonal shift about the halfway mark, when the rug's pulled from underneath you, and the blanket is taken down from the wall, and now the whole film looks totally different. It was this edgy, dark, medieval, like almost horror sort of opening, and then it becomes this bright, almost hopeful sort of piece where the light comes in from outside and you can see the healer is actually managing to do some work and maybe get through to the king, and they're having like a good conversation, and she literally is half lit on her face, and like her face is literally the yin and the yang of the good and the bad, of trying to talk through your problems literally. And then the king is still shrouded in darkness even though the light has come through, showing off this sort of like bright, hopeful sort of vibe, but unfortunately there's just so much desperation in there that it doesn't fully come to fruition. I just think it looks really beautiful.
I think, in that moment, I think it does two things. I mean, the light brings hope, but it also adds to the discomfort because it shines a blinding
light. Literally shines a light on it.
Everything that's being hidden.
Absolutely.
And what these issues and these demons actually are is in some ways scarier than what they're initially portrayed to be. So, you know, it's great that there's kind of a duality in a single visual act through the film, but yeah, I think we're getting dangerously close to spoiler territory, so we're gonna pull it back, and as always, on Cameo Launch, every review is a recommendation, so do check out The Healer via the link in the episode notes. It's a fantastic, fantastic film, so please do follow the link in the notes and check that out. We're also going to weigh in on Misha's pick, which is He Took His Skin Off For Me, by director Ben Aston. So, George, where do you want to start on this one?
Well, for me, this one actually has a sort of pleasant place in my heart. I actually know this film. I knew this film long ago. I probably watched it when it came out in about, I think it was 2015, 2014. I think I was at college, and it was my second year studying film studies anyway. I came across this film, and I thought it was so weird, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. I think I even went to bed and dreamt about it, woke up the next day, watched it again, and then showed some people in my film class. And I wrote a practice essay on it. So when Nigel sent me this podcast, this short film for the podcast, I was so excited. I immediately went and found an old USB from college to see if I could find the essay I'd written at the time. Alas, no, I could not. So we're going to have to wing it based on me watching it again several years later. And I still love it. It's still beautiful. One thing I wish I'd kept in my brain all this time was the score. Oh my goodness, the score is beautiful. It's like this little digital, idyllic, mysterious. I'd love to hear the music for like the same composer to do like a Scooby-Doo film, because it just has this sense of like wonder and mystery behind it. And I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, agree on all points there. It's visually striking for obvious reasons. I mean, the premise is right there in the title. But it's done in such a way where there is this calming domestic, pretty much domestic bliss, shrouding really, really strong emotional violence. It's a really interesting take on how insidious toxic relationships can be, and how when one person does all the sacrificing, you know, dutifully, quietly, and the other person just lets them do it, you know, it has a almost magical way of visually representing the kind of damage that does to a person internally, while having everybody in it have very sort of restrained performances. You can kind of see in the performances of the couple that it focuses on, just the little bits of just raw emotion hiding and suppressing. And even though, you know, there's no blowing up at each other, there's no bubbling up, you can physically see the damage it's doing. I mean, this guy is walking around with no skin on, leaving blood everywhere, and you know, you see the way other people react to him as well. And you know, it's always kind of brushed aside or not given its due consideration by his partner. And you know, you do find yourself just screaming, just like, get out.
Do something.
But, you know, it's done in such a calming, tender way.
Yeah.
That, you know, it almost kind of masks it all. It's amazing.
Which is crazy, because that makes it poignant and relatable, which is like almost the annoying thing about it, where I can honestly say that I have probably taken my skin off for a partner. I'm watching this film in every way. You can look at this as a sort of metaphor for just change, as it were, sometimes, which can naturally happen, both willingly or not. But I think it's beautiful. I mean, the whole thing is about kind of stripping yourself of your own identity in a relationship. And, you know, the skin here is basically saying, like, the way you are yourself and the way you do things, you're removing it. And it's crazy how you're saying how you can see that in almost every scene. But the performance and obviously the visual element of it as well, he's literally wearing this with him everywhere he goes. He is this weight on his shoulders and the way he's changed. And it's so well done and it's beautiful. My favourite quote is one bit towards the end where it said, he had less to say now. Or maybe he felt he was already saying it. And that is chef's kiss kind of quote. And that kind of sets the scene for all of it. And I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, again, you've got to give it up to everyone across the board, in front of and behind the camera in this one. It's perhaps an easy target to compliment the prosthetic work on the person who's taken their skin off. But you've got to mention it, because it's incredible. You know, particularly with the kind of constraints you have on a short film, the kind of time, effort, and money that must have gone into it is mind-blowing.
And it says eight hours in makeup each day just for this, to make a short film, which is just wonderful, the amount of effort gone in there.
Yeah, just amazingly well done. I mean, to say nothing of the set dressing, because, you know, you've got all of the usual domestic things you expect to see. You know, you've got the girl doing like the laundry and washing up and all that kind of stuff. Yes. But you know, there's just blood everywhere.
And
you know, the way that is kind of made to be normal is it just kind of blows your mind as you're watching it. But over time, and even though it's a relatively short film, you know, it's crazy how the film itself kind of almost makes that normal to you, the viewer, as well. You know, and you know, you kind of have to remind yourself, like, no, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This is wrong. And you know, you have to really come to terms with not just the fact that this is a toxic relationship, but just that it is so normal as well. And for those reasons, you know, it becomes a very relatable story. It becomes a very relatable film. And I think, you know, a lot of people can probably project their own experiences onto this kind of a story, as was mentioned in the interview as well. And, you know, the ability to take a crazy out there concept and make it so universally relatable, you know, you can't really say more than that. No. If you're looking for why you make short film, basically that's yes. why. That's absolutely why.
Yeah, you're trying to invoke emotion in the viewer, and if you're invoking a really relatable emotion, then absolutely you've got your audience on your side, which is why I mentioned that. In a way, it almost annoys me, because it feels like I'm being added. It feels like I'm being seen when I watch this film, which is both lovely and kind of irritating, which is why I'll leave you with my final thoughts, that the He Took His Skin Off For Me is beautiful, charming, and altogether a little bit alarming.
I don't think I could have wrapped that up any better. So, yes, let's wrap it with that. So that's two outstanding short films from two, I'd go so far as to say two visionary filmmakers. Please check out both films via the links in the episode notes. You can also find a link to our review of The Healer in the notes as well. So those are our two films. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to our platform, head over to cameolaunch.com, where you can find a ton of reviews for excellent short films from filmmakers all over the world. You can create a profile on the site that will let you do all kinds of cool things, like comment on the articles, store a list of your liked film reviews, get notifications when new reviews are posted, keep track of your orders from our online store, and even store your payment details for a faster checkout. You can also follow other users of the platform, which is a great way to pick up recommendations on great short film from people who enjoy our content. Out in the wider world, you can follow us on the socials, so at Cameo Launch on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and to our YouTube channel for all of our newest video content. So once again, thanks for spending time with us and listening to us ramble on about the movies we like. Please keep your eyes and ears open for new episodes. And above all, be safe and support each other, especially in these crazy times. So until next time, it's goodbye from the irrepressible George Moll.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
And it's goodbye from me. You all take care, and we'll see you next time.